Joint Committee on Ways and Means for February 21st, 2005. I will also reopen the hearing on SB 5506. I understand that there are a few questions from the committee that parties would like to respond to first, and then we will go into Ms. Schuchner's testimony. We will try to do this portion by 9 o'clock, and then we will go into SB 5514 and the capital construction budget. So please begin.
Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the committee. For the record, I am Cam Croce-Frawley. I'm the Commissioner for Community Colleges. You should have in front of you responses to the questions that you raised on Thursday. We do not have responses to the co-chair's suggestions for additional performance measures. Just wanting to check in with the chair and members of the committee that I believe we discussed that would be part of phase two.
That's correct.
And so we did not prepare responses, but in looking at the list, we believe that we will be able to manage most of them. So to begin, questions from last Thursday. Senator Gordley asked a question about community college student demographics and gender data. It is listed there in the answer to number one. 53% or a little over of the total headcount at community colleges last year was female, and 42 and a little better was male. Senator Walker asked questions about loan types that were available for community colleges. There's an answer there that talks about subsidized and unsubsidized loans. It also talks about the federal Stafford loans and federal direct loans, and I can certainly go into detail there, but as the chair said last week, all of you can read, so I won't belabor the point. Program suspensions and deletions. Senator Gordley asked for the number of programs suspended, deleted, and added. The next three pages is detail of 2003-04 program additions, suspensions, and deletions. Just for your information, a program can be suspended for 3 years before it is automatically deleted, or the college can ask for it to be reinstated. So they are in sort of a hiatus period. That takes us to page 5 of the document. The percentage of the population attending community colleges in rural Oregon. Senator Gordley asked for an example of what we call market penetration in the department. Because not all community college district boundaries follow nicely on county boundaries, it is somewhat difficult to arrive at a real penetration rate. Particularly, let's say, if you're looking at Central Oregon Community College, it covers Crook, Deschutes, Jefferson, and a bit of Klamath County. Right. And so that little bit of Klamath and Lake is hard to figure what's the population there without doing a GIS study of zip codes and other things. So in the time available, we looked at those districts that were comprised of a county or multiple counties that followed the county boundary. And so the examples that you have there are reflective of what we found in our work since last Thursday. Senator Gordley also asked a question about English as a second language and adult basic skills, particularly probing the question of, was there sufficient capacity in the system to serve all those who were seeking that service? We have provided for you a general look at that all 17 colleges do provide ESL. Not all colleges keep waiting lists. You have listed there two that currently do. I think it pretty much goes without saying that there is not sufficient capacity for English as a second language or adult basic skills across the state. Documenting it is a bit more difficult. Representative March then asked about both ESL and adult basic skills at correctional facilities, and we've offered information there. And there is a more comprehensive chart on page 6. Senator Gordley asked about Carl Perkins concentrators and their grade point average. So at the bottom of page 6, we have provided the percentage of students, both the whole number and the percentage. And it would appear that 43.3% have a grade point average of 3.5 or higher. 26.9 in addition are 3.0 and higher. And I'd be happy to stop if you have additional questions, but otherwise, being cognizant of the time, I'm racing through. On page 7, Representative Wisnett asked about the process for program approval. There's a discussion there of both community college program approval and private career schools and the process that they are required to go through. Senator Devlin asked how colleges were dealing with Carl Perkins proposed reductions. Right now, we think most are just planning for it, and it will be part of their budget for next year, or budget planning for next year, I'm sorry. Community college student transfer. Senator Gordley asked about the number of community college transferred to private institutions. In conversation with the Oregon Independent College Association, we have established a number of about 500 students a year. Indicate, the Independent College Association indicates that that's a fairly stable number. There's also a listing there about the National Clearinghouse, the nationwide data, so that we'll be able to tell the committee wherever a community college student in Oregon goes. Representative Jensen asked for further information regarding earnings change and wage gain, how they are measured and how they are defined. And there's a brief explanation on page 8, and then we have actually attached about 4 pages that gives you the full federal definition of how those wage gain is calculated.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordon.
I would just like to thank the commissioner and the department for responding so quickly to the questions, and frankly would like some time to study the responses, particularly around program suspensions and deletions at the various institutions, mm-hmm. and again the impact mm-hmm. on capacity to serve. I have a question about the Carl Perkins grade point average information. I don't have the performance measure in front of me related to Carl Perkins, but the data would suggest that the performance measure should be increased from 2 point, an expectation of 2 point grade point average to something quite a bit higher.
Noting for the record that we now have a full quorum for the committee, having a quorum for the Senate side. There was one very minor thing, and I think it may be just a miscalculation, or maybe you have to do what some people have to do, and that is, in some cases, you're not taking gender information, so you go by the names of what the gender is. But if you look at your percentages on your first question on page 1, it only equals out to a little bit less than 97%, so they're about 3% unidentified by gender. So.
Senator Devlin, there would be individuals who choose not to report that information.
Well, with that, we will move into President Chu's testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Gretchen Schutte, president of Chemeketa Community College and also a member of the State Board of Higher Education, the State Board's chair of the Excellence in Delivery and Productivity Work Group of the State Board of Higher Education, more commonly known as the More Better Faster Work Group. But what I really am is passionate about the need for all people in Oregon to have access to learning at all ages and for a lifetime, having worked in public education in Oregon since 1975. All of our educational systems, as you discussed last week, must focus on students first and their learning, and in our case, the case of Oregon's community colleges, we also need to focus on and do focus on accountability to our local communities. What you have heard about community colleges and workforce development from Commissioner Price-Brawley is so important, and I was asked to add briefly a sense beyond numbers and performance measures of the people, the lives, the families, the communities, and businesses that are impacted by Oregon's community colleges. But before I address that topic on behalf of 17 Oregon community colleges, I'd like to address some of the questions that were raised last Thursday, again using Chemeketa examples. First, Oregon's community colleges work not just to mirror the diversity of their communities, but to support that diversity. At Chemeketa Community College, 10.5% of our employees and 14.2% of our students are Latino, compared to 14.6% in our district. African Americans comprise 0.8% of our district and 1.5% of our employees and 1.1% of our students. And we're working on further improving those figures, and we do have work to do, particularly with regard to faculty ranks. Senator Gordley asked about the strategies we are using, and they are multiple. In addition to working to diversify our workforce, these multiple strategies go from developing and nurturing and, as necessary, demanding a welcoming environment to curriculum changes that reflect our diversity. And Senator Gordley asked about remaining challenges and how the legislature can help. And from Chemeketa's viewpoint, we particularly need help to keep the door open. We will be there if we can open the door. We need help with multiple instructional opportunities, but also with student services support that matches diverse needs. This week I've had to recommend reductions that close the door in many ways. Community colleges, as you have seen, have lost 70,000 students and are projected to lose another 40,000 students under the budget currently on the table. Many students who are part-time, low-income, first-generation students of color are the people in these figures as we have cut courses and raised tuition and reduced access. So as Senator Gordley knows, your continuing challenge and also your support in this arena is appreciated, as we are not just losing students from our community colleges, but in many ways from the educational system. These are people who have no hope, are stuck then where they are. They can't move forward with their lives and can't move forward to get a better job. They're just lost to the system. Second, a member of the subcommittee asked what kinds of courses were affected when the 2003 legislature withdrew FTE reimbursement from certain adult education programs. At Chemeketa, examples of those classes would be non-credit courses in art, music, fitness, writing, courses that meet individual needs for self-improvement, and that gather community members for good purpose and to strengthen skills and also to strengthen community bonds. And for many who attend, these self-improvement experiences have become the first step to other college courses and to college careers. And of course, there has been a relationship between having these opportunities in our communities and the community college approval ratings in our state. Yet at Chemeketa, in a steady decline over the last few years, non-reimbursable self-improvement FTE is down 13% from last fall to this fall, largely through reduced course sections. Third, we were asked about other resources that we have available to supplement the general fund. As at other community colleges, Chemeketa has successfully won many public and private grants to allow us to offer innovative programs to help our students. In 2003-04, we won $14.3 million in grants after $18.3 million the previous year. Our college foundation has an asset base of $2.1 million, and it continues to work hard to raise money through private philanthropy. In addition to supporting 90 scholarship funds, the foundation has helped us add 4 instructional buildings in the last 10 years, and these are wonderful results, but targeted to specific needs. And there are many areas where the general fund can't supplement our efforts, even though these efforts are valiant and leanly staffed. These efforts to raise grants and to find donors can generally be targeted to specific need in many areas of the general fund that can't be supplemented. But to my main message, having worked in many different roles in Oregon's community colleges, having worked at three different community colleges in Oregon, having worked for Oregon State University and also superintendent of the Gresham Barlow Schools, and even as interim commissioner for Oregon's community colleges in the late 90s, I feel I've been very privileged to have windows into the pre-K to 20 educational enterprise that you're hearing about this entire month. And I think I have some understanding of that enterprise and how important it is to have it be interconnected and to be one where students can go as fast or as slow as their circumstances require in order to learn. Each grade, each learning opportunity is important. Kindergarten through high school is important. Getting an associate degree, a bachelor's, a master's, a PhD is important. However, when a person wonders how to begin, and how then to move smoothly or successfully along a continuum, or how to just take the next step toward getting efficiently the education or skills they need. There's one part of the education enterprise that has really been the go-to sector for Oregonians, and that's the community colleges. Community colleges have been, we are, the safety net for all citizens to have access to post-secondary education, and we are worried about the shrinking size of the net, needless to say. So I'm going to share what Chemeketa does for its communities. I also know the other 16 community colleges do the same. I heard you reflect your knowledge of our multi-purpose work last week, and so I'm going to be very brief. If a person cannot read or hasn't been successful with secondary or post-secondary learning, Chemeketa Community College offers another chance. If a person needs a skill for a job or to get a promotion, Chemeketa offers the chance. If a person wants to start the journey toward a bachelor's degree, he or she can begin at Chemeketa. And more, if he or she wants to complete a bachelor's degree at Chemeketa, that can be done as well, thanks to our partnerships with Oregon's universities. If a business needs assistance to better train its workforce, Chemeketa's Training and Economic Development Center is there. And if a company or if they need help with their computer work, Chemeketa Community College is always there. And if a community wants to, if a company wants to locate in a community in our district, Chemeketa is almost always part of the recruitment team because employers, leaders of our cities and counties know that we can help train that skilled workforce. Over the past 2 years, it's been more difficult for Chemeketa students to enroll in the classes they need. We have fewer sections, and we have many that close within minutes of registration opening. It has been more difficult, for example, as you've already discussed, to get into an English as a second language class. It's not that we don't want to help. It's that resources don't stretch as far as they used to. It's also more difficult for students to enroll because our students have to pay more for tuition. In my 3.5 years as president, tuition along with the access fee has gone from $39 to $60 a credit. And full-time students pay about $900 a term in tuition and much more when you add books and fees and the child care that allows people to participate at all. So it's not surprising that Chemeketa's numbers are down. Just to bring it home for our college, our year-to-date reimbursable FTE for the last complete year of data, 03-04, is down 8.7% since 01-02. Our year-to-date unduplicated headcount is down 11.6% since 2000-2001, and this reflects our loss of individual students. If you just look at the current fall term enrollment, which is quite an indicator we've found for our future, we are down 12.2% since 01-02, or 7.7% since 1,825 individual students, or 7.7% since 01-02. So we continue to embrace the diversity of our population, and we would love to keep our so-called penetration rate. We've had a wonderful history at Chemeket of serving one out of every six adults, about 12% of the overall population, 16% of the adult population. The reason that I agreed to chair the More Better Faster work group, because I already had more than a full-time job, but I agreed to do that because the charge to that group was to find ways to help individuals succeed in college and to do it in a more timely way. I am committed, as so many others are, to working to identify and remove barriers in our systems, to do what we can with the resources that we have, and to identify what is the best use of additional resources to remove barriers to progress. In the More Better Faster work group, community college colleagues and university colleagues together identified seven areas where pre-K to 20 system need changes to become better aligned, and all seven of these areas are being addressed. Much of the alignment work or gap analysis has been completed in the last little more than a year, and now we need action and commitment and resources particularly so that community colleges can continue to play the critical and multiple roles that we have. As Senator Gordley identified last week, we also in the More Better Faster work group identified acceleration of progress through high school as very important for many students. As you picked up the paper this morning, you could see quite a story about the challenges of students in poverty in just feeling comfortable in school. And then we have concern about the transition to high school. And I have concern also about the transition from high school to community college or to university. And what can we do in order to ease that progress? And certainly experience in college while you're in high school has been an effective way to encourage participation. In the Chemeket districts of Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties, we save local families $700,000 a year through our College Credit Now program, and I know we encourage many students, we at least let students know that they are capable of college while they're in high school. So that's one piece of the work of the More Better Faster work group. We've also discussed at that More Better Faster table better transfer processes, and the joint boards approved the Oregon Transfer Module for implementation beginning in fall 2005, and I think you do know that this is speed of light action in educational terms to work within a year and then to have something actually be implemented the following fall. So now students can take a year of courses at any community college or university and transfer again to any of our 24 universities with this module and not lose credit to have what they've taken count. Or students, and we want this work to be much more fruitful for students, or students can take 2 years at the community college and transfer with an AAOT, the Associate of Arts Oregon Transfer Degree. And we have a stated commitment to work together with the Joint Boards Articulation Commission and the Joint Boards to refresh and to make more powerful for students that Oregon Transfer Degree. All of our community colleges and universities have said they will be at the table with a student-centered perspective, and I'm very encouraged by that, to make more powerful for our students on a statewide basis that Oregon Transfer Degree. In the third arena, we have identified programs and majors for which articulation agreements among OUS and the community colleges are needed in order to ensure smooth paths to success. And faculty groups are gathering to do this work in key areas. Dual enrollment agreements are also in this mix of action areas to support student progress from a statewide perspective. Again, we're working on those seams and trying to have the border crossings be eased a bit. We have also identified a student data collection and analysis effort that the governor has recommended in his proposed budget, and students themselves and all of us will be better able to track and plan for student progress with this data analysis and collection effort. Also, just very recently, over the last couple of weeks, there's tremendous excitement among community colleges and universities about looking together at the Articulated Transfer Linked Audit System. It used to have really an awful name, but we've just changed the name to ATLAS, A-T-L-A-S, to reflect the strength that there could be if we had shared this. It used to be called OLDA, But we're very excited about the possibilities here where students, families, faculty, advisors, others could actually have access to an individual student's progress and also see in front of them what would be the most clear path to meet their educational goal. But again, we are challenged to see how community colleges can afford to participate and to provide our students access to this powerful tool. In another arena, we've identified needs across the state that could be met with more online delivery and simply more sections of high-demand courses, those that are bottlenecks or log jams when students can't take that next course that they need to take. And we just wait for resources, but certainly we'll continue our collaborative efforts along these lines to speed the progress of our students. And finally, we have identified best practices for student retention. All of these efforts have OUS and community colleges working together and also K-12 leadership at the table to meet the needs of students. So we are working to tie it together with a statewide student-centered commitment. And as I listened over the last couple of days, I am very encouraged by the commitment you have expressed along these lines. In all of this, community colleges have been accountable and adaptable. However, we are failing in our efforts to stay affordable and accessible or even to be players in this collaborative work because of the loss in numbers of staff and also the increased workload on those who remain. For the future of Oregon's economy and the citizens of our state, we need to find ways to keep our community colleges at the heart of our communities, delivering training and education to all who need it. The community college is a key economic driver. I'll say it for Senator Walker as she said it last week. Your community colleges also provide hope to diverse individuals across the state, including those who have never had anyone in their families gain post-secondary skills. Community colleges deliver in this regard. We used to be affordable. We remain committed to opportunity for all. The children in K-12 need to know there's a community college waiting for them. The adults who do not have their secondary or post-secondary skills need to have hope that they can get them at age 20 or age 50. The person who wants to develop professional technical skills needs to know she or he can get those at a community college. And the business owner who wants a skilled workforce needs to know the community college will be there to train employees. Without your support, as you may have read about in the Statesman Journal over the last few days, at Chemeketa and at other colleges, these hopes are being shattered. Chemeketa's budget process has a cycle of its own, of course. I didn't choose to have front page publicity right now about our difficult program cuts and layoffs, but we've been working over the last 2 weeks personally and privately, letting staff know, and then last Friday began a series of all-staff forums at the college to discuss layoffs and service reductions that have been necessitated by the prospect of further erosion of general fund support for Oregon's community colleges. And our public wants to know and needs to know and needs to have opportunities to weigh in. So we are trying to get information out, and of course we will have many public budget committee meetings and board meetings as part of our process over the next few months. In conclusion, as Chair Devlin referred last Thursday to the golden age lasting 4 months for community colleges, I started my new job as president of Chemeketa Community College in that very July 2001. I gave my first all-staff address September 10th, 2001. In a matter of a couple of months after that, the golden age was over. It's been very painful. None of us wants to close the doors to opportunity. Citizens of our state have given community colleges an 88% approval rating because we have met community needs. We are the solution for Oregon's economic recovery, as our buttons say. But we are the solution only because we are the access point for Oregonians, for the people who are really the key to economic recovery in Oregon. Oregonians do not want us to keep closing the doors to those who have the need for us to keep them open. Thank you very much.
Questions for President Schutt?
Comment?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to honor your commitment to all of education, Madam President. and say that, you know, while we have been on this path of disinvestment in all of public education, it is still heartening to know that we have people like yourself who present a quality of leadership that I personally admire, and I know that we all do. We need to do more. That's our challenge, and you've made the challenge very clear to us this morning. But again, thank you for the quality of leadership that you're providing, and particularly on the higher ed board. And please, please stay the course. Please.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, and Gretchen. I echo what Senator Gurley said. Seems like, excuse me, our problem up here is that, you know, we have just this huge demand for public services. You've listened to a lot of the testimony. K through 12 is coming in. They want at least $300 million more. Oregon Health Science wants $30 million more. Community colleges, at least $22 million, maybe. I don't know how many more that is. I mean, if there is the demand for the public service and the public is unwilling to pay it through taxes, okay, what are the solutions? Senator Gordley is talking about tax reform, and I'm talking about using our natural resources, and probably everybody here has a little bit different viewpoint of the world, but it just seems to me that at some point the citizens of Oregon have got to figure out that, you know, are you going to choose our children, or are we going to choose a spotted owl? And it seems to me in this particular time we've chosen the spotted owl over our children. And we set aside all this reserve, and I mean, it's a solution. And to me, I think the legislature understands that. But when we get out with the general public, and I'm saying this for the audience, is that when you go back into your communities, how are we going to solve this problem? We need more money. Taxpayer isn't willing to pay it. I don't know if we can get tax reform through. I don't know if we can go back into our federal forests and start harvesting more of our trees to create more jobs. Senator Walker's here now. I did this just for her because she wants me to come up with a plan. And we are working on a plan. I'm going to come forward with a plan sometime before this session is over, say how we can create 20 or 30,000 more jobs in the state of Oregon. That's what's going to pay for our education. I mean, we're basically singing to the choir up here, I think, a lot of us, because I think there's a huge amount of support for community colleges throughout our whole area. I mean, where would the city of Pendleton or Umatilla County or my district be without Blue Mountain Community College? I mean, we'd be in very sorry shape. So that's a comment, but I mean, it's an appeal also to the people out there, is that, you know, how do you put pressure on federal judges to say, okay, we have to change things if we're going to really fund our education? Alaska has $600 million of surplus. They don't have an income tax or a sales tax, so maybe it's not the taxing. It's using whatever your niche is. Nevada doesn't have any problem, but they have gambling. Maybe we should go back to gambling. I don't know. How do we fund education? That's the dilemma I think we're facing up here. There's my soap opera again, Chair. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Did you want to respond, President?
Chair Devlin, Senator Gurley, Senator Nelson, and other members of the committee, with some trepidation about departing wholly from my own plans for a script here, I will make a brief response. And one, I think community colleges are the key to jobs. Two, that I know many of us in community colleges are ready and willing to roll up our sleeves to work on any of the issues that you identify. But third, my specific and limited role here is to kind of ring the alarm bell with regard to community colleges. And I'm not an alarmist, and I think my record shows that instead we've tried to figure out what to do next. The Oregon Community College presidents have been saying 44-40 or fight, and not because it's a cute saying, although it is, but because it is at that level of funding that community colleges can begin to turn back from years of disinvestment and try to do more in our communities to create jobs. If our work in this legislative session is framed simply to get to zero, to the current level of funding, the $410 million of the current biennium, we will continue to spiral down. And that is a death spiral for community colleges and, I believe, for our communities in our ability to be the economic drivers in those communities. So I don't have the answers to the questions that are raised. My limited and very uncharacteristic role is to say we must do something now. I'm ringing the alarm bell for community colleges, and I think in many ways for the future strength of our state.
Just to follow up, I mean, would you choose a spotted owl or would you choose children?
Chair Senator Nelson, faced with the two in one hand and one in the other, of course I would choose the child.
Yeah. Well, Oregon isn't doing it. It's pretty simple.
Senator Whitsitt, and that'll be our final question.
Chair Devlin, just to follow up on what Senator Nelson says, you know, 3 decades ago, Oregon was the national leader in per capita income. Our education system was the envy of the country. Our social services system was the envy of the country. Fast forward for 3 decades, and our education system is featured in Doonesbury. And we lead the nation in poverty and unemployment. And precisely what we've done is we've stopped using the cornucopia of natural resources that we live in. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and we will move on to our next presentations. With that, I will close the hearing on SB 5506, open the hearing on SB 5514, the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development Capital Construction. Ms. Pruce-Bailey, you have a presentation before this, and could we, we're going to have only, roughly an hour and 20 minutes to get through this. So if everybody could come up just as soon as the one president finishes, the next one come up. And also, so I don't have to ask this question for every presenter, one question I would ask them to answer in their presentation is, if they have their local match dollars already in place.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to do just a quick overview of how we arrived at 6 projects in the governor's recommended budget. I'm on page 3 of today's handout. This is the first time in over 25 years that community colleges have been in the governor's budget to receive matching funds. They are Article 11G. $91.2 million is what is in the governor's recommended budget. It will provide the match for 6 different projects. There is a dollar-for-dollar match required at the local level. And each of the community colleges, each of the 17, did submit a prioritized list. We asked for their 3 top priorities for capital construction or renovation. From that, we winnowed it down to the top 17. Then they were ranked and rated. Slide number 4, this gives you the statutory authority for capital construction within the community colleges. I just bring to your attention the first line in 341.009. The state should maintain a policy of substantial state participation. And it goes on in the second sentence to say the district should provide a substantial portion of the funds for capital improvement. Just noting the shared responsibility there. Slide 5 walks you briefly through an excerpt of the administrative rule that the department and the State Board of Education use to prioritize the projects. Given the time, I shall not read them to you. We ended up with over $330 million worth of projects after we had done the administrative rule and had our top 17. I asked a group of community college presidents to join me. I guess I better catch up. Huh? I'm double-tasking here.
Commissioner, I might clarify for the committee if those of you you had a new day three packet in front of you. If you brought your old day three packet, it is much shorter, so we should be using the new one that should be on the dais.
These slides are the same. We have just added takeaway pictures of the projects to the packet that you have that was delivered this morning. As I was saying, because we had such a large request from all 17 colleges, I ask a group of presidents to join me. And at the bottom of page 5, you see 4 bullets, and those are additional ranking criteria that we came up with. So we had 17 projects, but now we had them in a rank order. That brings us to the 6 that are before you, and I would like to introduce Dr. Peter Engsted. He is the president of Rogue Community College, and he is going to discuss his project.
Mr. Engsted and other presidents are presenting. In addition to the question that I asked about whether you had a local share, could you give your approximate FTE in students and your total number of students approximately?
Okay. Good morning. My name is Peter Engsted. I'm president of Rogue Community College, and I'm very happy to be here today. And I appreciate all of you for being a part of this and hearing our projects today. Rogue Community College has approximately 14,000 students headcount, 4,200 students FTE, and yes, we do have a match. The citizens of Jackson County voted 54% to 46% to approve a $24 million construction bond for Jackson County last November, and we're able to use that money to do some of the construction work we need to buy some of the facilities we need in Jackson County. We could catch it there. What I'd like to do a little bit, this is the Grants Pass campus of Rogue Community College. Rogue Community College was started in 1970 by the citizens of Josephine County. Can we go to the next slide? And in 1996, by an 85% vote of the citizens of Jackson County, they voted to become part of the Rogue Community College District. This slide that I have on the screen there shows the only building that we actually own in Jackson County. This is the old Montgomery Wards building that we turned into a classroom facility. We have approximately 8 different facilities in Jackson County, only one of which that we own. All are either old retail facilities or car showrooms or something similar along that line. And what we're hoping to do with one of our projects is to combine with Southern Oregon University. And up on the board there, I have a partnership vision of an expanded facility in Jackson County in the Riverside campus. And this would be a partnership with Southern Oregon University. This whole area in Jackson County is all about partnerships. We have a partnership right now with the Jackson County Library. We needed a library. The citizens of Jackson County wanted to expand and upgrade their library, so we went in with them, and we're now leasing part of their library for our college library in Jackson County. So this is a chance where we can both work together, ourselves and SOU, to create something stronger than larger and better than any of us could individually, and better for the citizens and better for our students. The other part, and this is a $23 million project of which approximately each of us would have about half, $11.5 million. If each of us had $5.75 million in 11G bonds, we would match the $5.75 million from our point of view. And as I mentioned, we do have the match from our bond election. So we can go on to the next slide. And the next slide. This is an example of one of our facilities in the downtown area. This is our First Street Learning Center. Again, we share this facility. It's an old retail space. And could we go to the next slide? And this is an example of the other project that's in our request. This is the old Tyco Electronics building. This Tyco Electronics is a subsidiary of Tyco Toys, which I'm sure you've heard about in the newspapers. Most of the chief executive officers and such have been indicted and are in the process of being prosecuted. What we looked at this situation is the people of Jackson County, when Tyco Electronics went out of business, approximately 400 jobs were lost. 103,000 square foot facility was available, so the people of Jackson County and Rogue Community College decided to make lemonade out of the lemons and are building a professional technical training center, which again is another partnership, and this time with OIT, to create some manufacturing technology courses and create professional technical courses in Jackson County. And if you could go on to our last one. And then the last one here is, again, just an artist's conception of the vision of the downtown center for SOU and RCC. Approximately a 93,000 square foot facility, of which about 30,000 would be dedicated to RCC, 30,000 for SOU, and then 30,000 joint use. And those are the projects that we have on the table.
Yes, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to tell the president here, and I've talked to him last week, the library that he speaks about down in Medford in Jackson County is just a stunning piece of work. It is a beautiful piece of architecture, and it is a great vision about how people can partner and utilize scarce resources to produce something that works for both all facets of the community. And I hope that other cities take example from what Jackson County and Medford have done in this facility.
Additional questions?
Mr. Chair, yes. I guess I'd have one.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The building you're sharing here, so is the university paying for one-third or half of this one? It's a great concept, and I like everything you're doing, but I just had that question.
Chair Devlin, Representative Wisnant, yes, that's correct, and I believe they're going to be making their side of the presentation on March 8th to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Mr. O'Connor.
Members of the committee, I would like to introduce Dr. Patrick O'Connor. He's from Oregon Coast Community College.
And good morning, Mr. O'Connor. I can say I like your name. Give it mine.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pat O'Connor, president of Oregon Coast Community College. We have received our local match money from the citizens of Lincoln County on May 18th of last year. We have approximately 470 FTE, approximately 3,000 students per year. We are the second newest community college in Oregon. We started in 1987. And we even have one of our founding board member here to my left, Jeff Outerkirk, who's a founding board member of the community college. In brief, Oregon Coast Community College has all the ingredients of being a fine community college. We have great students, great faculty, great programs. The one thing we lack are buildings, adequate facilities. And I just wanted to show you a few slides this morning and talk a little bit about that. We are an economic catalyst in Lincoln County as far as giving people hope, as far as for diversified job training throughout the area, and as well as literacy skills and everything else that goes with that. One of the slides that I'm showing over my left shoulder to you is our current college facility. It is our campus center, also known as the former Bar Jake's High Tide, that we rent in Lincoln County. This is probably shown, as you can tell from the cars out front, is back when the community college facility that we rent, as we rent throughout the area, was at its high point. Okay, we have since made some improvements to the area, but just a little bit about our facilities that we rent a former bar. We have a fire station, old fire station up in Lincoln City, and we rent a room at the Forest Service Station in Walport. So we make, as Dr. Inks said, we try to make lemonade out of lemons. The problem that we're running into is that our rentals, that facilities that we have, are inadequate for the educational mission that we've chosen to undertake. We've moved over time from being mostly community education to being an educational institution that has college transfer, professional, technical, and literacy skills. And as you can tell from this photo, it is somewhat lacking as being a credible academic environment. I can move to the next photo, I'll show you what it looks like now. It hasn't changed too much. We have still have the problem with the traffic, and we put a coat of paint on this, but again, this is a rented facility that is clearly inadequate for meeting the educational needs of our students, one that does not meet fire codes, one that we've been put on notice from the Office of Civil Rights for not meeting accessibility requirements. That's one of the things that we'll be working at our next college board meeting, is work out an agreement with the Office of Civil Rights, Department of Education, to bring up at least to some minimal standards that we can do in that building. What I'd like to show you are also some pictures of the interior, typical educational setting. We have, most of the time, we have classes held throughout the Lincoln County community in between 35 and 40 different locations wherever we can find space. The space that you see behind my shoulder are some of the classroom settings that we're using. We pretty much use a lot of times volunteer labor in order to make the best out of what we have as far as facilities. This is one slide of the educational settings you'll see at Oregon Coast Community College. The next is another showing of one of our ESL classes. We have people basically jammed in, and trying to make this a quality educational environment is indeed a challenge. We do have, as I mentioned, we did pass a bond measure, and in the dire economic times that Lincoln County finds itself in, we have our voters have stepped forward locally with the hope of that education brings to stand forward and say, yes, this is important to Lincoln County, this is important to residents of rural Lincoln County, to have a facility that will serve small business, literacy, college transfer needs that are throughout the area. The plan was, and it was presented to the voters, was a $23.5 million project to have facilities that would go for a joint Oregon Coast Community College, Oregon State University facility on the Hatfield Marine Science Center, so we could continue to pursue our aquarium science program that has captured the imagination of the local people, as well as the National Science Foundation that has invested $750,000 into that program as far as operational. Also a Central County facility in South Beach, North County in Lincoln City, and a smaller facility in joint partnership with Samaritan Health Systems in Walport. As I mentioned, the economic conditions of Lincoln County are dire. The Economic Development Alliance of Lincoln County has put community college facilities at the top of the list as one of the things that would have a positive impact on the educational environment, economic environment of Lincoln County. We're continuing to work closely not only with Oregon State University, but also with our local high schools in order to help make that. Our local voters have shown a commitment, and I'd like to close by saying that we have done our homework as far as going out and doing the necessary studies to make sure that we're doing this in a clear, straightforward, methodical method as far as justifying space that we'll need and the type of programs that we're trying to offer. Our voters in the area have seen that. They have made a commitment to follow through on that process. And what we are asking for today for the state's consideration is please consider a partnership with us in that as far as offering matching state dollars. I'll end with that and see if you have any questions.
Questions for Dr. O'Connor? Yes. Representative Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand this right, there's actually four projects here you're doing. You've got one at South Beach, one at with the Marine Center, one in Lincoln City, and one at Walport.
Mr. Chair, Representative March, yes. It seemed to make more economic sense to join into partnership with Oregon State University for sharing, for example, fresh seawater and things like that. The reason I'm usually asked is, why do you have three versus one campus? The main challenge that we do have in Lincoln County is transportation over 1,000 square miles, and it seems to make sense to partner where we can. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. O'Connor, what's your unemployment rate in the counties that you serve?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I believe it's around 8%.
And
it is not the highest in Oregon, but it is significantly higher on this side of the Cascades.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And your bond measure passed by how much?
I believe the final tally was 54%. Yes, and it surprised. In fact, I'm still surprised it did pass, that people would take that much ownership in times of economic hardship.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point that out because you have an economically depressed region of the state, and they feel that they need to make this investment in their education system, and so I appreciate that. And you must have run a good campaign.
Dr. O'Connor, you gave your FTE and number of students before. Could you give those again, and then I have a question about those.
Mr. Chair, yes. I believe it's 470 FTE and roughly 3,000 students per year. Most of those students are part-time, and that's one of the things we're trying to grow.
Have you done any analysis in terms of your potential population for students and what sort of a projection you might see over like a five or ten-year period, in terms of how your student population might grow, given if you can create greater access?
Mr. Chair, that's a very good question that we've looked at. Given our population base in Lincoln County of approximately 45,000 students, we should be, if we had facilities, of being almost of the size of Clatsop Community College as far as that FTE. So it should be able to accommodate quite a rapid expansion in growth as far as serving those students. One of the biggest obstacles we have currently to our filling our classes or actually holding classes is the lack of a space. We have done some projections based on get back to your question, on variables that we should be able to almost double our size.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, joining me now is Dr. Susan Wolf. She's with Columbia Gorge Community College.
Good morning, Chair Devlin and committee. And I want to thank you first for being here on a holiday. We appreciate the fact that you're doing that. And what you're going to hear are some common themes. Patrick O'Connor just spoke about economic recovery and vitality. And in Hood River and Wasco counties, we also face perennial high unemployment rates that average anywhere between 8 and 11% unemployment. We did pass in November an $18.5 million bond. It passed with almost a 60% margin in both of those counties. We currently have 978 FTE, and that's about 6,000 headcount. Again, a lot of part-time students. You'll see today that our presentation will be focusing on economic recovery, and I want to say slash vitality, because we just had the good news last week that Google Corporation is coming to the Dalles, and we have community partners in that community that go out and seek large federal grants, and we're, in our minds, we're past economic recovery and we're going into the area of vitality. I'd also like to point out that we have two of our board members with us today, Dr. Ernie Keller and Christy Reed. Dr. Toda is behind me, as well as Dennis Whitehouse, our facilities director. So I'd like to move on. Our first slide, you'll see our campus. The buildings that are shaded in blue are those that are slated to be removed. This is a former tuberculosis sanitarium that was built in the 1920s, so it was not built for education. You're going to see in the next slide, go ahead and go down, I think. There we go. We have several phases in our facilities master plan, and with the bond we passed and with the help of the state, we'll be able to complete phase number one, which will be two classroom facilities, and then also purchase property and build a permanent Hood River Center. Currently, we're leasing a former fruit packing plant there. And then we'll also be able to do the first part of phase two, which is a workforce one-stop center and also a first responder training center. We're the only legislatively designated first responder training center in the state. Next one, please. That was that last building right there. That's the campus build-out. Okay, let's move into now the economic and community vitality here. These figures came from a 2002 statewide study, and the statistics are specific to Columbia Gorge, but any of the colleges that you're going to hear from today could give you similar things. We contribute $12.1 million each year of annual earnings for our two counties and additional Sherman County. We return 28.3% on taxpayer annual investment. Speaking to Senator Nelson's questions earlier, we generate $23.30 worth of social savings for every $1 spent in the community, and for every credit earned that has an increase of $115 of income, 102 of that goes back into our local community. So you can see how the community colleges very definitely have a benefit with the communities. The next slide, and I'm going to go quickly because I know we're short on time. With Hood River County, we just annexed them 2 years ago. We opened our lease facility in the fall, and we have already doubled our enrollment there. Also, with that annexation, it doubled the size of our district. We also have, with our new nursing program, our local health care providers have given us $225,000 in cash contributions, plus in-kind for faculty salaries and clinical sites. So we have a very active community in providing learning and education for our population. The next slide, like I said, I know that you have heard Google Corporation coming in. We also have attained $1.75 million of federal dollars. Excuse me. Slow down.
Committee, you also have underneath your packet another packet that actually is a color presentation of what the good doctor is giving you. So.
Okay.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Devlin. Anyway, going back to our federal grant dollars, again, our community partners, we work very closely with the city and county agencies, and they help us going back and seeking dollars. And our congressional delegation back in Washington, D.C. have also been very helpful. They were part of the Google Corporation decision for coming in. We also work very quickly.
Yes, Senator Gordley, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
If you don't mind me asking the question here.
Yes.
But what sold Google Corporation on your community?
Okay. One of the things we had was available industrial land. The second thing, we have high bandwidth capability with our Q-Life ring that goes to Bonneville Power, our hospitals, the local agencies, the college. We also have workforce availability, but we also have power production with the three dams within 40 miles. And the Columbia River, they will need a lot of water to cool the equipment that comes through. So we had kind of those natural resource things that they needed to come into the community, plus a community college who's going to be providing the training for the workforce. They're expecting annual salary for those positions of $60,000. You can imagine what that means for the counties of Hood River and Wasco that have such high unemployment rates.
Are you going to have... will you be able to maintain capacity at the community college to deliver on what Google Corporation is expecting?
If we are able to build our new facilities. Right now, we are out of space. I have a situation for spring term where there is one night where I have to try to find or put four classes in one space. We are out of space. I'll move forward a little bit. My tutoring center has been moved to our cafeteria. We had to close a building because of black mold. And so those very basic skill students, the first generation students, are struggling because we're not providing adequate support services because of space. So they're trying to have those tutor services in the loud cafeteria. It's just not the best way to encourage those students to continue forward. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Senator.
Just to follow up with Senator Gruner saying, this fiber optic ring that was built around the city, that was actually a city built or a county built?
That's a partnership thing, and we again, there were also some federal dollars that came in to help with that too. Congressman Wyden and Senator Wyden and Congressman Walden helped with that as well.
I mean, I mentioned that for the committee just because we always have this conflict of should cities and counties be involved in developing fiber optic networks.
And yeah. We all did it together, and that's and also our MCMC, our hospital. I mean, it is a real true partnership.
So it's public-private partnership.
Correct.
That's what you're saying. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Okay, thank you very much. Recognizing as well as President Schuette spoke to you about this morning, the very strong importance of the P20 system. We're working really closely with our K-12 partners, and also we partner with Oregon State University, Portland State, OHSU, OIT, and PSU. Being the small area and we don't have a higher ed institution right in our area, our students have choices, and we're working very hard to provide multiple pathways for them. With the new construction, we would like to have a couple of spaces available for our higher ed partners to be able to provide access to bachelor's completion programs and even further, so people do not have to leave the Columbia Gorge region. They can go ahead and continue on in their educational path and do it locally. So that's another one of our aspects. We also received an incentive grant through the state. They were federal dollars, where we're going to be working with Hood River Valley High School in conducting a pre-CNA program that will move Hispanic youth and other minorities into our health occupations programs. So we're also working very closely with those partners. Growth challenges, 31% enrollment growth just since the fall of 04 in Hood River, now that we have a lease space. We are missing, or we're lacking, 32,000 square feet of instructional space because of the buildings we had to close. We have $1 million worth of fire issues, ADA issues, et cetera, that required us to close some of those existing buildings that you saw earlier. Also, our nursing program, they're in jeopardy of losing their regional accreditation and their professional accreditation because we do not have the appropriate facilities. Our facilities cannot support the current and future instructional technology that's going to be needed. In addition to being a TB sanitarium, it was also designed to be a bomb shelter. So sometimes those thick walls create problems. I spoke about the tutoring center already, the fact that they're in the cafeteria. I know you're interested in the sustainability, that if we have these facilities, how are we going to sustain them? Well, we have to maintain those buildings that are closed. They're still there. So we'll have a cost savings. Those people will actually be coming in now and supporting new facilities that are much more efficient with the use of computer-controlled HVAC systems, et cetera. Go ahead and advance even to the last one. Where I want to end is the perspective, again, on our students that President Schutte spoke about. Our motto is that we build dreams and transform lives. And we had a student who spoke to Representative Dahlin when we were here a couple of weeks ago, and she said, the state supported me for 2.5 years while I got into our nursing program. That saved the state 18 years of state aid. Now, if we can have your investment into our community colleges, I think you can see the return on investment. Thank you very much.
Any additional questions for Dr. Wolf?
Mr.
Yes.
Chair.
Senator Walker.
Thank you. Just one comment, Dr. Wolf. I was listening to your comment about how you were trying to keep people in the community, because I imagine your out-migration is pretty high.
Actually, in the Mid-Columbia region, people are so strongly committed to that area, they want to stay. And one of the focuses we're going to be starting to work on now is for them to realize they can stay in the area and telecommute for some types of occupations. But they very much, if they do go away to school, they want to come back. So we have to be very respectful of the fact they want to stay and support this community where they grew up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, next is Renee Ferguson. She is from Klamath Community College, and with her is President Fred Smith.
Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the Ways and Means. I'm Fred Smith, for the record, and this is Renee Ferguson, and she will present our story. So, no further ado, Renee.
Okay. Good morning. Klamath Community College, the state's newest community college, began operations in the back of the Assembly of God Church, and we spent our first 4 years there. We continue to offer adult basic ed in 3 modular buildings that are off campus in conjunction and partnership with the city school district. In 1999, we purchased 2 parcels of property. The first, 50 acres, an alfalfa field, and second, commercial property with 2 metal buildings, previously a carpet and a farm implement store. And here is the same building after renovation. And this is the second building. This next picture shows the campus before additional construction and purchase of adjacent property. In 2001-2002, enrollment at the new campus exceeded our expectations. It was 28%. So we bought adjacent property with another metal building. And we also constructed a building for classrooms and a larger learning resources center. Here's building 1 after renovation, and it provides the college with 4 classrooms. The next slide is building 4 after construction, all metal buildings. The next slide is a view of our crowded parking lot. Enrollment continues to increase. This slide summarizes our enrollment. FTE ranges from 513 in our first year of operations to last year 1,413. And you can see in 01-02 is when we had the 28% spike. Our last update of the master plan was completed in January 2004 with input from the community. Highlights of the plan are displayed, along with the estimated duration of the construction project, depending upon the method used. And we did bring a copy of the master plan with us. Currently, we have two projects underway in accordance with our master plan. We are constructing four additional classrooms at the south end of the building to keep up with enrollment. This next slide shows the engineer's drawing. We are going to be constructing our main entrance off of South 6th Street, an access road, and then a parking lot that's 114 spaces on the other side of the irrigation canal in the field, which is the next slide. So students will have a walkway over a canal to get to the campus. These are just some of the shortcomings of our current facilities. Most importantly, we cannot continue to meet the needs of the students and the community due to the lack of insufficient facilities. With the new facility, we will be able to meet continued enrollment growth while expanding our program offerings and becoming the community's college. This is an example of what the campus might look like. It's taken from our master plan, and it lays out buildings, parking lots, circulation. If you build it, they will come. This is the community's field of dreams and hopes for their future. And I'd be welcoming any questions you may have.
You said you had about 1,400 FTE. How many students do you have approximately?
Chair Devlin, last year we served 5,300 students approximately.
And I see in your presentation materials that you will be going out later for a general obligation bond. Do you have any idea what the, this is a very technical question, but what the millage rate will be for your voters and that bond measure?
Yes, I do. If you'll bear with me. I believe it ranges from 39 cents a thousand to 49 cents a thousand, depending upon the length of the debt issuance, whether it's 20 years or 30 years.
And have you done any long-term projections on what your student population might be if you were able to, build and acquire this type of campus? The additions that you're talking about?
Chair Devlin, we did that about 5 years ago, and they came up with a number of 2,000 FTE. But we're going to run that research again because it appears that you can't research hope, and no one predicted a 28% spike as soon as we had our first buildings. And so we're kind of doubting that number is correct. But we will this spring commission another research to see what that number will actually be.
Questions from the committee? Representative Mark.
Thank you. And following up on your question, Mr. Chair, what is the process or what will happen if, for example, your bond measure does not pass?
If it does not pass, then basically what we have said is that we will try again. And I believe the agreement with the presidents was that if an institution is not able to make the match, then the next one down on the priority list would get the opportunity, because we will have failed then to develop a match for this. With this match, you've given us a real... you've given us hope, our institution hope, because, you know, to have to pass something that's double and go to 80 or 90 cents per thousand, that in Klamath Falls would be almost untenable. But you're giving us a fighting chance, and we really, really, we respect that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Wisnett.
Do you have history of school bonds success in Klamath, or anything to give us an indication of...
Chair Devlin and yes. Representative Woodson, the last bond levy that passed for a school in Klamath County was in 1980, so it's been a few years. So it's going to be a tough road.
But Excuse me, but we have passed bond measures for the jail, for the county courthouse after the earthquake. So, and we are paying those off.
Yes, Representative Wisman. Senator Whitsitt and Senator Walker.
Talk about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But this growth in FTEs, that's amazing. And no facilities. So can you comment or tell us why that is?
Chair Devlin, Representative Whitsitt, we are extremely efficient in what we do, and we do things very, very with a keen eye towards maintaining budget and efficiency, and we run at about 85 to 90% of capacity all the time. The photo you saw of the parking lot is pretty much from 7:30 in the morning till 10 at night. Most of the time it runs. We run hard. We have an expression at our institution, everybody laces them up because we run hard. And that's what we do. That's what we do.
Senator Whitsitt.
Chair Devlin, President Smith, you've demonstrated a growth in facility that is quite admirable without outside funding. How did you finance that exceptional expansion?
I never use the right term, so I'll let her say.
Chair Devlin, Senator Whitsitt, in the beginning, Klamath Community College did not have bonding authority, so when we purchased the campus, we used full faith and credit obligations. Then when we needed the second expansion, because it was approximately $2 million, again, we issued full faith and credit obligations. And for the current project that we're expanding, the classrooms, we're using OSBA Flex Fund, a 10-year issue, and we're using general fund resources to build the access off of South 6th Street and additional parking.
Thank you. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was a little concerned about what I was reading here and the shortcomings of your current situation, and I want to make sure that I'm not reading it wrong. You say that you have limited partnership with OIT and K-12. That's not because you aren't trying. That's because of the situation that you have. Isn't that true?
Senator Devlin, Senator Walker, it's really hard to partner when you have nothing to bring to the table. And
you are the man of phrases this morning. It's very good.
But you know, we're in conversation with K through 12 and with OIT, and we're looking to create like a basin-wide master plan for education, because the K through 12 institutions are looking to do capital construction. You've probably heard of OIT's Center for Health Occupations. We have to all plan together and stand shoulder to shoulder, because there's just not enough bonding money in the basin to get it all done. And so it may be that part of this, we do something that then perhaps K-12 doesn't have to do, or we do something here that perhaps OIT then can shift to us and make room for something else they would like to do. But it's very hard to partner when we can't bring that.
Mm-hmm. And we do some partnering. We pay funds to OIT to use their Learning Resource Center, so our students have access to that library. And we put our students in empty seats in their classes, and now they're talking about having some of their students into our lower division courses.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask, I'm real familiar with Klamath County and know where OIT is and movie theater and all those things. Where are you located? Are you spread around town? Field there. There's a lot of fields like that in Klamath County.
Well, Senator Devlin, Senator Walker, when we first started, we could boast that we were in every public school building in Klamath County. And since we've gotten some facilities, if you know where OIT is, if you go there on the northwest side of town, mm-hmm. go as far as you can to the southeast and you'll find our field. We're about 5 miles diagonally across town. And so if you're familiar with Klamath Falls, if you went down South 6th Street, you'd run right past us. So we're out of what is known as the Y Junction in Klamath Falls.
Well, thank you. When I'm sprung from this place and resume my court reporting duties, I'll look you up next time I'm down there.
Okay.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you. Chair Devlin, members of the committee, I would like to invite Dr. Greg Heyman up. He is the president of Clatsop Community College.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, I want to thank you for taking time on your president's day to attend to this important matter. I am Greg Heyman, president of Clatsop Community College. The picture you look at on the screen is a picture of our current main campus. What the picture doesn't show you is that it is approximately 1.5 blocks in space, and the elevation from one side of the campus to the other differs by about 70 feet. One of the great challenges of our current campus is it's built on the side of a hill, as is much of Astoria. And as much of Astoria, the land moves. It's just a matter of how quickly. Our oldest building, which is Toler Hall, was built in 1908. It was originally built as a high school. Astoria School District had the wisdom to vacate the building about 60 years ago. It was condemned. We took it over and have been using it ever since. We are the oldest community college in Oregon. We will be celebrating our 50th anniversary in 2008. The people of Clatsop County had the wisdom to invest in its own future 50 years ago, and we are looking to the state to help us to be there for the next 50 years. The project that we have is a replacement of the campus. The reason we are looking at a full replacement is because, again, we are looking at facilities that are very old. They are beyond the point of being able to be retrofitted with the technology and the infrastructure necessary to support the educational programs that we offer. They are structurally unsound, I think we could say. We've had engineering studies to indicate that. Again, Toler Hall, the oldest building, actually is built without a foundation. It is sitting on top of rubble from a quarry that was there years ago. One of our newer buildings, the library, unfortunately, has a wing, the east wing, which is on land that is moving to the east and down the slope a bit. So one of the things that we have to do on an annual basis is backfill on the parking lot on that side because it keeps moving down and we keep putting more asphalt on top of it. Our purpose, again, is to replace that campus with a new facility, again, that will allow us an opportunity to continue to provide the educational services to Clatsop County. We are the only post-secondary educational opportunity for the people of the county. Let me give you a little background on our campus. We do have 1,400 FTEs. We have been about at that level of enrollment for the past decade. We've gone up and down a little bit from time to time. That's about where we've been. We have about 8,000 students on an annual basis. Our county penetration varies from year to year, but it has been as high as 14%. I believe it's at about 12.5%. What that means right now is that about 12% of every person of Clatsop County is a student of ours in one way or another on an annual basis. We do not yet have a match, but we have surveyed our county, and they have indicated to us that they are more than willing to step up to the plate and to provide the local resources, their share of being able to provide the resources necessary to build this new campus again that will provide us an opportunity to serve our community for the next 50 years. We have looked at other options. One of the options that has been considered is to try and rebuild on our current site. Again, we have concluded because of the limited space at that site, because of the logistics and geography of it, because of the buildings that are on it, that doesn't seem to be the most cost-effective method. We have been cited by our accrediting agency, Northwest Commission on Colleges and University. We've been cited by the Department of Education Civil Rights Committee, and we've been noted again by a number of geological and engineering studies that our facilities are woefully inadequate. They are incapable of providing continued educational service, and that they do need to be replaced. One of the things I would note is that as a result of some work with our accrediting agency, we are currently investing $500,000 in our current facilities in order to show a good faith effort in addressing some of the access and environmental quality issues associated with the current site. Everybody, including the accrediting agency, agrees that this is $500,000 that we are spending on facilities that need to be torn down. We would much prefer spending that money on a campus that will be with us for the time to come. And so we believe that this is the time for us to move, and we're looking to the state for your very important help in this project.
What is your FTE?
FTE is 1,400.
1,400. And do you have any idea what the potential millage rate might be with a $20 million bond measure in your county?
Yes, Chair Devlin. We believe it will be around 40 cents per thousand.
Okay. And it's unclear here, but in terms of replacements, are you going to replace on-site or at a different location?
We are currently assessing two different campus sites. One is in Astoria and one is in Warrenton. Those are the two highest sort of highest population areas within the county. They provide us with different, I think, very positive opportunities. The one in Astoria provides us with some partnership opportunities with the Oregon State University Seafood Facility, Maritime Museum, some other city partnerships, including a community library partnership. The Warrenton site provides us with some other opportunities that look, I think, good for the county. Both of the sites are being considered with the possibility of expanding opportunities with Portland State University in terms of we need to find a way of providing ways for people to complete a four-year degree in Clatsop County, and we need to formulate those partnerships. Again, we lack the facilities to support some of those partnerships at the moment, as Klamath Falls does, and this new campus would afford us the opportunity to do that for the members of our county or the community.
Are you assuming as part of this project that your buildings on your current campus would be demolished and that the land has some saleable value? Or
the campus that we currently occupy is, we actually only own outright about 3.5 acres, not very much land. The other is in partnership with the city, and so the directions that we would take with that property are being worked out with the city itself.
Final question, then I'll turn it over to committee for questions. Given the age of your campus, are there historic issues in terms of some of your buildings and what the future of those buildings might be?
Chair Devlin, very good question.
Given the nature of Astoria also.
All right. One of the great features of Astoria is its history, and we do have many facilities on the historic register. None of our buildings are, so that is not a problem.
Okay. Questions from the committee. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask you the same thing I've been asking. What's your unemployment rate?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know the answer to that. I believe it's very close to the state average.
Okay. And then and the reason I ask that is especially for you folks who haven't yet passed your bond measure. So the second question I have is, do you have some concern about the double majority problem, which seems to have grown significantly as a problem because this last election we did great by registering all these people to vote who I think some of them only will vote in presidential elections and then not vote later. So then that adds to the problem of trying to pass a bond measure. So my question is, do you see that as a problem in attempting to pass your bond measure?
Chair Devlin, Senator Walker, we have a couple reasons to believe that would not be a problem. One, Clatsop County has a history of supporting education. Astoria School District did recently pass a $20 million bond, which has a very high millage rate because it's limited just to that school district. The bond that we would be looking for would be in the same amount, but would be spread across the whole county, so it would have a lower millage rate. We also, as I said, did do a statistically valid survey of the whole county, which indicated that they are more than willing to support the construction of a new campus for their own future. We just need, again, because we just need the help of the state to get us over the top there.
And the final question, Mr. Chair, would be when are you going to put this up for your election?
The Chair Devlin, Senator Walker, the planning is that we would go to the electorate in November of 2006.
Okay. Well, you've got some statewide races you can grab people with. All right. Thank you.
Senator Gordley, then Representative Wisnett.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Could you speak again, please, to the consequences of a delay? You talked about a $500,000 annual amount that you must pay in order to show a good faith effort, and that's a mandate from, there's an acronym here, I'm not sure what the acronym stands for.
Okay. Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley. The acronym is the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities. It's the regional accrediting agency for colleges and universities. We had been repeatedly cited for deficiencies in our facilities, both in terms of access and in terms of work and teaching space quality. And we had had challenges in terms of addressing them, and have, I think, for some time now put our hopes in the construction of a new campus. The accrediting agency has indicated to us in a subsequent report 2 years ago that they were not willing to allow us to put all of our hopes in a new campus, and that we needed to begin a process of quote-unquote investment in the current campus. And so beginning with 2 years ago, we're in our second year, we are spending $500,000 to make improvements on the current campus that provide greater access. For example, we have facilities that were built, this is hard to explain, but we have facilities that were built with the expectation that there would only be male students, and therefore there were limited or non-existent women's restroom facilities. So we have had to go back into buildings that are built slab on grade and go in and tear them apart and put in women's restrooms facilities, and we're in the process of doing that.
Mr. Chair, it's amazing what you find out when you ask a question. And I'm almost afraid to probe further, but I do need to do this, because what you're telling us is that you've spent $1 million, and I'm going to assume that that you've been mandated to spend $1 million, and I'm going to assume that you didn't spend all of that on women's restrooms. So what else have you, how else was the money spent?
We have heating and ventilation problems in a number of buildings that we have spent money on. We have had to do exterior work in terms of create greater access to at least the door of some of our buildings. We have addressed restroom issues in two buildings. We had environmental concerns with regards to our kilns and our pottery program. They had to be moved to another facility. We had space and access limitations with regards to our nursing program, which we've moved and constructed essentially new space within an old building. So those are the kinds of things that we have been doing.
Thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a big advocate for community colleges. I'm on record, and we've obviously underfunded our community colleges for some time. And all of you have made great presentations this morning. It's obvious that we have some community college locations that are in desperate need of facilities. However, I can remember back in my undergraduate days many, many years ago when having some of the beginning courses with 100 people in some of those lecture halls for classes. I guess my question is to the commissioner, are we looking at online universities in our communities and how many, you know, are people going to those for some of their basic courses, and are we going to develop 30-size classrooms for some basic liberal arts courses, but we really need to be focusing on technology classrooms and things like that?
Chair Devlin, Representative Wisnett. I'm not sure I got all of those.
I guess the main thing is the impact of online universities in our communities, especially for some of the basic courses of English and psychology, to start on the way to four-year degrees. I understand the technical requirement, but I think that's a big impact on us in the future, is online universities. And University of Phoenix is right next to down here in South Salem, and it's their customer base is growing tremendously. And how is that going to impact? Have you looked at that on your impacts as far as we're looking at these constructions?
Could I expand on your question a little bit?
Yes, Representative Westman.
Are you basically asking us, are they planning to build a campus for the last century, or are they planning to build it for the next century?
Would you like to answer that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Devlin represents the WISNET. I would love to provide some response to that. I think that we are certainly working to integrate the possibilities that technology provides, and we're not looking to continue to do all education within the classroom. But we also know that the population that we serve is a population that is least likely to at least immediately benefit from technologically mediated instruction. There are people who come to us with inadequate preparation. There are people who come to us with inadequate technology backgrounds. And so they need a place to begin that is physical. They need a place to begin in which they have face-to-face instruction. And it may be that at some point beyond that, they will be more capable to benefit from technology. So we're not looking to build something that will be vacated as a result of technological advances 50 years from now.
Follow-up to that, on your existing facility, I can imagine, given that it's hard to put technology into the wings of this building, which were built in the 60s, and obviously very difficult to put it into the main portion of the Capitol that was built in the late 30s, I believe. Must be nearly impossible in your facilities to actually put in what you need for technology, or it's been very expensive.
Chair Devlin, yes, that certainly has been a challenge to us. And again, just even while technology is certainly a challenge to us, even more basic infrastructure issues like the ability to provide heat and electricity to the building become increasingly challenging as those systems break down. And, the ability to a computer lab requires considerable electricity and HVAC capacity, which we are not able to provide in those buildings.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, joining me now is President Ralph Orr. He's the president at Tillamook Bay Community College.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, you've heard a long list of instances about facilities that have been converted to community college use, and I think they may have saved the best for last today, and so I'm grateful for the opportunity to come and to share with you our dream for a campus for Tillamook Bay Community College. First, I'd like to share with you a little history to piggyback on those who have gone before. In 1984, Mr. Tom Wadd was the owner and operator of Wadd's Funeral Home, and he decided to eliminate his local competition, so he bought out his competitor, Hartman's Funeral Home. That took care of the competition, but it left Mr. Wadd with two buildings. And the board of directors of Tillamook Bay Community College was searching for a facility about that time, and so a deal was struck. And in 1984, the college began to rent the old Hartman Funeral Home, which is located on Highway 6 in Tillamook. Promptly thereafter, an open house was held. Let's see, right there. Ken, thank you. An open house was held, and the public was invited to see. And if you'll look at the second paragraph of the slide, you'll note that there's a list of the facilities, and I just have to share with you what those used to be. There was five classrooms. Those were formerly the living room, the dining room, and the bedrooms of the apartment that was attached to the funeral home. There was a computer lab, which is formerly the funeral home's business office. There was two shops, which was formerly the Hearst garage. And the biology lab, which was formerly the embalming room. And then there was a moderate-sized auditorium, which was formerly the chapel, complete with pews for seating. And I have to tell you, we're still using that facility successfully today. 7 years later, the college board borrowed $300,000 from U.S. Bank in commercial borrowing, and they purchased the building. It's been slightly remodeled since then, and we've added on two classrooms. But today it continues to house the college's administrative and student services offices, the library, classrooms, and laboratory space. One more slide, and that's a picture of it today. Next slide, please, Pam. There you go. By 2002, the college had outgrown the building on Highway 6, and I was very interested in leasing space that became available when Tillamook School District closed an elementary school. Built in 1927, the Wilson School has a beautiful front facade, but unfortunately, its interior spaces are designed for children approximately 3 feet high. However, it's located only a block away from the former funeral home, and so in 2002, the college began to lease 7 additional classrooms and an office in the old school. Because the school district anticipated needing the facilities back at some point in their future, they would only grant a 2-year lease, and so minimal changes were made in the facility to make it suitable for college use. Today, however, 50% of Tillamook Bay Community College's instructional space is located in Wilson School. Both the former funeral home and Wilson School are in need of extensive and expensive renovation and repairs. They have inadequate and unsafe wiring, old and fire-prone baseboard heaters, leaking roofs, compromised air quality, and dry rot. And those are at the top of a longer list of unmet needs that include earthquake readiness, fire sprinkling systems, and similar health and safety measures that are expected in today's facilities. Tillamook Bay Community College has conducted an extensive facilities planning process spanning 30 months. The resulting facilities master plan calls for construction of a small college campus housed in a single building or 2 smaller buildings on a size of sufficient size to accommodate future growth. Included in our plans are classrooms, labs, a library, faculty and administrative offices. Suitable and available property parcels have been identified. The campus will include space for professional technical education programs emphasizing natural resource-based industry training, allied health care, agribusiness, and tourism. These programs respond to community-identified needs and are jointly financed and operated with the Tillamook County School Districts and with local businesses. The professional technical training facilities will be modeled on the award-winning Applied Technology Center recently constructed in Canby. Additionally, a new campus will contain facilities and technology that will continue our practice of connecting county residents with the distance education programs of the Oregon University System. The new proposed campus will allow Tillamook Bay Community College to offer courses and student services for the first time in its 24-year history in facilities that were designed for that purpose. An analysis of the operating costs of the new facility compared to the lease, energy, and maintenance costs of the old buildings shows that despite their larger size, the new facilities will be no more costly to operate than the old ones and may, in fact, reduce costs. We hope the state will assist Tillamook Bay Community College to continue and improve our tradition of providing community college services that Tillamook County residents need and desire. A bond election is scheduled for May 2006 to ask county residents to provide the funds to match a state contribution. Pending a successful bond election outcome, we anticipate completion of this long-dreamed-of campus in 2008. To follow up on some of the questions that have been presented before, the cost will be 16 cents per thousand is the expected millage rate. There have recently been 3 bond elections in Tillamook County. 2 of the local school districts as well as the countywide library district have all been successful in passing bond measures. There are incorporated into the plans for our facility electronically mediated classrooms for 2 purposes. 1, we have small sites in North Tillamook County and South Tillamook County as well as all 3 high schools that are currently connected by ITV, and we would like to use those facilities to broadcast our classes as well as bring in electronic delivery of coursework for those sites as well as for our main campus. I'm trying to remember all the other questions that have been presented thank you. Our FTE is currently 300. We serve approximately 2,800 headcount. And we have done some analysis about growth, and based on the penetration rate, historical penetration rate in our county as well as our population, we anticipate that we can double that over time to 600 students. We've been as high as 474 in the past.
Any additional questions? Yes. Senator Walker, then Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to know your unemployment rate.
We are very similar to Oregon Coast Community College. We hover between 7% and 8%.
Okay. And then your community college would serve from what point south to what point north?
We serve, our boundaries match the boundaries, excuse me, Senator Devlin, Senator Walker, match the boundaries of Tillamook County. And so we go down to Neskowin on the south and up to Wheeler and Manzanita on the north.
And then my other question, Mr. Chair, is I own property in Neskowin, but I don't get to vote because I don't live there. That's not my home base. So I wondered about that because there are a number of people who own property from outside the area. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that impacts your levies.
Chair Devlin, Senator Walker, there is a tremendous number of temporary residents, shall we say, in Tillamook County, folks who come to visit and who own property but don't live there year-round. As I indicated, we have done research that shows that in the May, we have very high voter turnout, and in the May elections each year, we have exceeded the 50% mark, and so we have scheduled our election for May to get the double majority, and the vacant homeowner situation has not been a negative thing with other bond elections that have been held in the county, at least to date, and so we anticipate that will not be a problem for us as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a number of very small communities in Tillamook County that really would benefit from the services provided by this community college.
Additional questions from the committee? Oh, Senator Whitsitt, you had a...
Chair Devlin, Mr. Sprowley, for each of the six campuses, I wonder if you could give us information on what are the expected changes in the cost of maintenance before and after construction? What are the expected changes in cost of staff serving the same enrollment before and after construction? And what is the expected change in cost for a unit of education before and after construction? Unit of education such as a credit hour.
Chair Devlin, Senator Whitsitt will certainly work to get that information back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Orr, for your presentation.
Thank you.
Madam Commissioner, given the number of people here, I thought it's probably important to give a brief explanation of our process. We're in phase one right now, which is merely an overview of some of the issues before us in terms of we're spending a lot of time on budgets in terms of performance issues, outcome issues. We will be going into phase two in mid to late March, probably more like very late March, the way things are going. And then ultimately we'll go into phase three, hopefully sometime about 2 months after that, which is when we will make actual decisions. Given the nature of this bonding request, in the sense that we have not issued bonds for community colleges in decades, I think I feel, and Senator Whitsitt's questions were almost a preview, in a sense, because they were right on target. A good deal of responsibility in doing our due diligence in this committee in determining that that all these projects are worthwhile, which they all appear worthwhile, that they are doable, and that they will actually benefit our entire community college system of all 17 community colleges. Those parties that have been selected, should we go ahead with this, which I think there's a fairly good chance that we will, there is some obligation in this, in a sense, because your performance, should this go ahead and the bonds be issued, will to some degree not only reflect on those six community colleges but the other 11 also, and may have some impact on the state's willingness to continue to be involved in the area of capital improvements in community colleges. So I think the committee is going to be spending considerable time on this issue. We will probably send a number of questions to you in addition to the questions that Senator Whitsitt has posed for our phase two, and we will look forward to that discussion. Are there any additional questions? Representative March.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Following on that line of discussion, it appears that over half, approximately $55 million of these projects are contingent on local votes. And I'd be interested in hearing a little bit about the projects that were just next on the priority list, and with the thought that should some of these not be approved, that we maybe give some direction towards the e-board as to picking up some of the projects not on the current list.
We can look at that issue, Representative March. Did you have a comment?
Chair Devlin, Representative March, we can provide you with that list, and I believe that we have in the past in a substantive policy committee. But I appreciate the raising the question. Would you like that information to come to the full committee?
Yes, that would be.
All right. I'd be very happy to do that.
Okay. And to follow up, Mr. Chair, perhaps if it is available in the more detailed form where with the project narratives, if those were part of the discussion, and those would be also of interest.
Chair Devlin, Representative March, we currently don't have the one page, but we will certainly build them and bring them back to you.
Thank you.
I would comment on that request that it come to the full committee, the response, but of course, whoever is seventh or eighth or ninth on the list, should one of these other projects for some reason not materialize, they're probably not in a situation of having their matching funds either, because they may not be going out for matching funds, since they would not have the potential of match from the state right now, given that they're not on the project list. So, Senator Nelson.
Yeah, just on a different on the slide, I guess, this kind of bothers me, because the testimony that we've heard, I think, in this committee, we are not generating the revenue for excellent schools. I don't think anybody here could argue about that. I think we're getting quality public services just because of dedication of a lot of dedicated people. And the testimony today says our public facilities are not very good. So if you work backwards of that thing, all these things are supposed to have this circle possible. We don't have diverse value-added industries that provide well-paying jobs. The only one I heard today was coming out of the valley, out of Wasco County, or Columbia Gorge. And then you go back up to, following a step back, a track to provide a base for. See, I think we are going on an improper assumption that a clean, appealing environment is just enough to provide all those things. And I mean, everybody wants a clean, appealing environment, but we are not completing this circle of prosperity. We're not generating enough revenue for excellent schools or public facilities. And I just, from the viewpoint, we've got to change our whole policy philosophy that a clean, appealing environment is going to resolve all this. I mean, quality of life is a wonderful thing, and we have that, but we don't have the rest of this stuff. So from my viewpoint, that slide is pretty illustrative of what we're not doing. We're not doing what we should be doing as a state.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
May I just make one comment on Senator Nelson's comment and suggest that probably quality of life is tied very closely to the quality of income that is present or to the jobs that are in the community. And
I want my comment to Senator Nelson that although those words may not be the best words to use at this time, I would think if we were looking back in Oregon's history when we were making more use of our natural resources, I think that many of the parties that were involved in those efforts would actually have considered their environment a clean and appealing environment, that they probably viewed well, even here in this valley, when the Willamette Valley was at its peak of production, I mean, I think there were many good qualities in this valley at that time that were related to natural resources. There still are, but we are actually even here a shadow of what we used to be in terms of production of even food crops from what we were before. Part of that's
part of that's issues that you've commented on. Part of that's just changing world markets and our need to actually look at different types of crops than we have looked at before and other issues. But you look like you have a comment, Madam Commissioner. So.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, I would like to make a concluding remark, although the committee has done a fine job of bringing my point forward. This circle of prosperity was built in the late 80s. It was revised in 1997, as the slide indicates, and it's part of Oregon Shines, too. My point here is that the circle of prosperity, as you have so noted, is at risk. And we are here to work with you to reinstate it, to put momentum back into this circle, both through the actual construction, if you deem so, to both build and keep those doors open for the residents of Oregon. Thank you very much. Do appreciate your time and attention.
Thank you very much for the presentation. With that, we will close the hearing on SB 5514. Tomorrow, the committee is going to get somewhat of a change of pace. We will have the State Library before us. The State Library is, you've got a very small packet like this for the State Library to bring tomorrow. Actually, on Wednesday and Thursday, we have OHSU, which is not a very small packet. It is a folder about this large. So that's their plan for basically the rest of the week. Is there anything else for the good of the order? With that, we are adjourned till tomorrow morning.